Welcome to MCBI's 60 Mark, a podcast for curious thinkers.
And welcome everyone, it's Marina from MCBI, and I have one of the best jobs in the world because I get to interview people with the names like Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
But I would love to welcome Mr. Jamie Anderson. He's joined us on the 60 Mark podcast series. Talk us about leadership, capability, being awesome. And so welcome.
Thank you.
Should we declare that we're really good friends as
well? Yes, we should. We're pretending we've got wine.
Large quantities, just like we do in the kitchen. But no, I'm really happy to have you here because I think you've had such an interesting career so far. And I think a lot of people are interested when they see people like you who have opted to take a role that is mission-based.
Yes.
But that's not where you started.
It's definitely not where I started at all.
You started at PwC, was it?
I did.
Well, pretty much. So you went from money up to mission.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about yourself, what you've been doing.
So it's an interesting career because the naive Jamie when I got out of university was, well, I'm going to take over the world. I'm going to be a management consultant. And, you know, you get on the conveyor belt for the 7-year partnership plan. You believe all that crap that you get told. And then somewhere along the line, you get disillusioned. So my first step after leaving PwC was to go and work in a funds management company, a mutual one. And I thought, maybe that'll give me more of a sense of what mission I want to have in life, because it was mutual and looking after financial well-being. But the problem is that you can still get caught in the story of a company. Mm. And if that diverges too far from where you want to be as a person, that's where things happen that make you want to stop and take notice about where you're going. So for me, that was the GFC leaving that role at that funds management company through a redundancy. And that really started my journey proper in terms of examining what I wanted to be when I grew up.
What happened? What was it? Sounds like a pivot point where you went bang.
It was, because in my mind, I was sort of on this, I was about to become a general manager. I was about to sort of reach a high level in this company. And then it all stopped overnight, and it was a great sort of soul searching. I'm a great believer that if you're on the wrong path, the universe will correct you sometimes in an awful way. But it's always an opportunity to sit back and then look at where you really want to go, what can you do better, where have you been going wrong?
So
that took me about 3 years of soul searching to find out where I went. And the happy thing, the synchronicity about that, was that I actually was never unemployed. I got told, and then half an hour later got another job offer, and that job offer was for a not-for-profit. Initially I thought, I'll do this for 3 months and then get back to my normal career. But working for the not-for-profit actually made me really examine what goes on in life and what's important. And in a way, they helped save my soul.
Really? That's a big statement.
Yes.
So what is important? Here's a big question. What is important? I mean, even if it's just important to you, you know, like...
I think having a vocation that lines up with where... So everyone's got skills and talents. Mm-hmm. And I think in the beginning of my career, I got caught up in, well, I can just use those skills and talents to make money. And then later on, you realise that that's all just an illusion.
Yeah.
And that having a position is an illusion, because overnight, all the people that, suppliers and people that are inviting you to things, they don't invite you to anything because they were interested in you in that position, not you as a person.
Mm.
And you have to be careful to not marry yourself as a person to your position and your role.
Or your utility, as I call it.
Or your utility.
Yeah,
yes.
I see that, you know, that part of business where, yeah, I'm nice to you because you have utility.
Yes.
And it takes a lot of people a lot of time to, one, acknowledge that.
Yes.
To go, I actually do have utility.
Yeah.
But to also respect the relationships that are based on utility as well.
Yes.
And to get confident to go, well, we should be mutual.
Yes.
On it. But it's a pretty big, it's a big psych step, isn't it?
It is. And when I got my first big promotion, the CEO at the time said to me, just watch out, Jamie, people are only nice to you because of, you know, your new position.
Yeah.
And I did keep that in mind. I think it's a lot like the Roman tradition where there was the person behind the great warrior going, remember you're human, remember you're mortal.
Yeah.
And in a way, the CEO did that for me, but it became manifest about 7 years down the track.
Yeah.
I think sometimes things have to become a bit too real.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. I think we've spoken about this, that I know when I went out on my own, I had this period of time where I realised I was basically addicted to praise.
Yes.
And I'd had all this sort of external, sort of reinforcement that I was doing a good job. And then when I was out by myself, I had no one telling me I was doing a good job.
Yes.
And it actually felt like a withdrawal. And
yes.
Very disorientating too, by the way. I was like, I don't know what to do, really. Like,
it is. And that's the thing.
Jeez, I'm not that good after all.
They say the air becomes very thin. And there used to be this other thing another boss used to say to me is, who warms the sun, Jamie? Who warms the sun? Because the higher you get up in a leadership position, you're spending more of your energy energising your team.
Yeah.
And there's less people above you to energise you. And so if you don't have a very clear vision about what needs to be done, where you need to go, then you will, you know, wander off the path
or
lead your team astray.
Yeah, lead them down some dark alley like we are here. Or even resent. I think resent the constant appetite for the sun and the warmth that you provide.
Yes, yes. And I think... partly, you know, my father had very strong expectations of me when I was growing up, and then I was going to go to uni. And in a way, my first career was the projection of what my parents wanted for me.
Mm.
You know, you'll be the good son, you'll go and get that great job, you'll make money and have a successful life. But success isn't necessarily about having the best job and having the best money. It's about doing work that really satisfies you as a person.
Yeah.
And I have to say that one of the other turning points in my career was when I did my MBA, which sounds strange because people normally do an MBA because they want to, you know, get into the boardroom. And, you know, I always like all these little proverbs my friends say that in the MBA there's learners, yearners and confirmers. So you want to be a learner and a confirmer, never a yearner.
Yeah.
And the thing for me was, I think one of the most valuable thing I took away from doing my MBA.
Don't say me.
I made lots of great friends.
I was waiting to...
You are part of that. I was sitting in... No, that's definitely true. You're up there, Marina.
Thank you, dolls. I'm very needy these days. Sorry, was that?
One of the great things I took away from my MBA was, it was just a thought that occurred to me one day, is why am I doing all this work to put money in other people's pockets? Because money is the currency of, you know, it's the society we live in. It's the measure that people use. So that started an idea about, well, I'm doing all this for other people. I'm structuring and living my life for other people. And what is it that I really want to do? And the flip side of money is it buys freedom.
Mm.
So you get freedom to be able to choose how you spend your time and what you do in that time. And there's no point in doing that if you're on this career path where all you do is work.
Mm.
It's good for the bank balance. But
indentured slavery, I call it.
And that's what the redundancy taught me, because overnight we were a company that acquired six others.
Mm.
And if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. So overnight we were the opposite end of that transaction. And I had a team of 20 people. And I had a day to sit down with them all and tell them that they no longer had a job.
Mm.
And so that was a very difficult thing to do, have that conversation 20 times over with people who were all fantastic. Mm. And I decided in that moment that my role as their leader was to make sure they had a good ending and that the experience they had would allow them to go on and have better lives.
Yeah.
You do see, I see in my world as well, as you would, a lot of people permanently damaged through poor redundancy and poor endings.
Yes.
But and they carry it like a really bad relationship.
Yes, you know, they do.
Permanently scarred, which can influence and impact their capacity to live better lives, you know, forever.
Yes.
So, actually, let's talk about the NBA.
Yes.
Close to my heart.
Oh, yes.
But one thing that has always amazed me, you know, with the NBA is that, you know, when we were there, we learnt about law and accounting and economics and fundamentals of leadership for you from Adelaide. But I'm not sure about you. We didn't learn anything about information technology.
We did not.
Which is really weird because, I mean, we're old, but we're not that old.
Exactly.
But, it always struck me as this huge gap around leadership and knowledge. I mean, a lot of people don't understand how IT works. Yet here we are making decisions on businesses now that are essentially, most businesses now are IT-driven on it. And yet they didn't teach us or anyone else. I mean, we're different because we came from that background.
We're not quite old enough to remember punch cards, but
but we know people who did.
We do know people that did. I think it's a really good observation because the one thing that's happening now with digitisation, people often talk about where's your digital twin as an organisation, because a lot of organisations are transitioning from bricks and mortar being places to being service companies that sit within a digital ecosystem. And more we're seeing that the value on the stock market of an organisation far outstrips the net tangible assets. And that gap is the intellectual capital that they have. And if you're not managing that, which is the information technology, it's all those digital assets, then you're only managing a small percentage of the company. And I don't know how you can expect to be successful if you're not looking at everything that's on the table.
It did seem, lots of leadership programs, and they're fantastic, but they're very moment in time things.
Yes.
Whereas information technology strategies can really make or break companies over time now.
Yes.
And it's interesting how you know, from your point of view, you've now entered into the world of mission.
Yes, I have.
How do you see tech being a part of the new world of mission? And, you know, how do we deliver really great social services out there using tech properly? Big question, I know.
It's really hard, especially because there are some challenges with the particular clients that we attract. So a good example is a homeless person.
Yeah.
How would you digitally engage with a homeless person?
Mobile. Now I'd give them a mobile.
Yes. And so
an RFID. I'd put a chip in them. Sorry, was that rhetorical? No. Sorry.
I was surprised to learn, because I was starting to think about this, how could we reach these people to... Sometimes it's intimidating to go to a place and ask to receive help. So if you put an intermediation in it, like a digital application, then that could reduce the intimidation. It can provide better services in some instances. And homeless people and other disadvantaged people, it's a really interesting question. There was some research that we did as a national organisation which showed that homeless people do tend to pay their mobile phone. They do tend to prioritise the payment of their mobile phone because it is their gateway. It's their last connection with the rest of the world in some instances. And we found that really fascinating. And in fact, what's happened is that there's been it's very low graphics, so it doesn't use a lot of data allocation. It's almost like a TripAdvisor for homelessness. So you go here if you want good shelter, or here are the services. So some digital services are springing up around that, and I do have to say that there's some major telcos that provide some really amazing discounts for homeless people to keep them connected, and it's things like this that I think are going to make the difference the future.
How do leaders get their head around? I mean, let's be honest, a lot of those leaders would be 60, 50s, 60s, and I mean, I sit on a board, and they're great people, but I mean, they're not digital natives, shall we say.
Yes. They struggle with the email.
Oh, we'll get the girl or the boy to do it.
We'll write it out and have it typed up.
Which I quite like, by the way, because I'm into neuroplasticity, which means I actually understand it more. But they do. They're deferring because their knowledge is so low. in it, which is scary. We wouldn't have leaders who had a really low knowledge of accounting making big decisions.
Yes.
But a lot of people are really, like, they're in the dark. How do we close that gap now?
So I sit on a few boards. So I also have, in addition to my paid work, I have a enterprise that I own on the side. And
an amazing one.
Yeah, thank you.
It's wonderful. It's Mahalia Coffee.
Mahalia Coffee.
Yeah, don't worry, no one listens, so you can say whatever you like.
If you feel like you need it, it's the award winning.
Internationally.
And that was my answer to why aren't I doing something for myself.
Mm.
But what I'm noticing, as a few other boards I sit on, that there's the younger group, so people 40 and under are starting to get their first board seats now.
Yeah.
And I have seen on several boards those people starting to challenge the older people and push them. And it's interesting, the boards that work are where the older people listen.
Yeah, just diversity, isn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
Because they see the opportunity.
Yeah.
In business, an opportunity is an opportunity, whether you understand the mechanics of it or not. And the smart board members are starting to see that and then take some leadership on it.
Yeah.
And actually use the resources that have come to the board to help them do it.
Yeah. I'm always very sceptical of boards that have a very high bias or appetite towards power.
Yes.
You know, the ones that are really getting the whole diversity thing where they can get information and get stuff done seem to be performing much better.
Yes.
I don't know. That's a completely non-scientific appraisal, but...
I tend to agree. I think if you're on a board or in any sort of leadership position and your only personal reward is power, if that's your mission, then that is doomed to not end well for anybody.
No.
And
avoid those people at all costs.
And avoid being those people. And I think that's what my early jobs taught me as well. I had managers that it's a bit like, I'm never going to be like my parents. You find you say things that to your own children.
I
had a similar experience with managers. I learn what not to do.
Yeah.
So I, in my way, have tried to be the sort of leader that I would like to have, which is a leader that comes from trust, a leader that gives a line of sight towards what the strategy or the goals are, and then gives the space to create so that the people can actually go and do the work and feel trusted that they're valued.
Yeah.
Their skills are valued.
Isn't that a big thing? Like, they're actually respected, their knowledge is unique. And
yes.
So, my friend, it's our time to start finishing up.
Yes.
Don't worry, there's always a kitchen with a whole lot of booze in it. But advice to your younger self. When you're walking out with your shiny... I've seen those pictures of you.
Yes.
Shiny suit. Blue suit, white shirt, black
flicked
shoes.
Hair. The whole 90s catastrophe.
What would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself that don't get caught up in the illusion.
Yeah.
Because that's where I've tripped up twice in my career.
Thankfully
tripped up. They were strokes of luck in a way, because they were hard points in my career where I could examine myself. And I think I've come out for the better because of it. But I would always say to people, don't get caught up in the illusion.
Yeah, don't get caught up in the bullshit.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Last three questions and we let you out.
Yes.
I know the answer to some of these. Are you a cat or a dog person?
I'm a cat person.
Look how you say that. I'm a cat person. Favourite footy team? This I don't know.
Oh.
Do you have a favourite footy team?
It is the Crows.
Oh, God.
I loved
having you as a friend.
I have people that played in various SANFL teams that fed the Crows, so I have to barrack for the Crows.
No, you don't. You can just go for Portland. All right, I'm going to ask you. Do you think we walked on the moon, or do you think it's the biggest hoax?
I think we did.
Did you?
Yes. Aww. Maybe I'm naive, but I also like the fact that it was a goal that stretched us technologically, and a lot of great advancements came out of that.
Did they?
Definitely.
Next dinner party, we're going to talk about that.
Thank you so much, Mr.
Jamie Anderson, for coming and talking to us about your journey from money to mission.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening in today. We look forward to you joining us next time.